Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Hi, Mitchie. How are you going?
Good morning.
So I'm really excited this morning because we have one of our favourite people on our podcast today, and it's so awesome to have him. Dr. John DeMartini we've worked with John before, and we've spoken to him on the podcast before, but he's an award-winning educator and humanitarian who's presented numerous inspiring educational programs for over 47 years, and we've been able to witness that for ourselves. He is he's been awarded recently the top human behavioral specialist by International Association of Top Professionals for 2020. And for us today, I know that we really wanted just to talk to Dr. DeMartini about what's been happening in the world, sure. What's going on with the whole coronavirus situation, and because we know that his take on that is just going to be phenomenal.
Yeah. So brace yourselves.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Hi, John. Dr. John DeMartini with us this morning.
It's so good to have you back, John. It's
always good to hang
it's always
with
good
you.
To have a chat with you. We just love your take on things and the way that you communicate the message that we sometimes can't find the exact words, and you just nail it. So we're looking forward to this chat.
Yeah. We miss you as well, John. We miss you as well.
It's been a while, so thank you.
I know.
Yes. We're going to get straight into it because I know that we've got lots to talk about. We might just get stuck in and get going. Do you want to start, Mitch?
Sure.
Is there anything that you want to start with?
Can we just start with briefly, can we just talk about what is a virus and what people need to be doing when there's a problem with a virus? Can we have a start there?
Okay. A virus is what they call an obligate intracellular parasite, which means that it by itself is not a living cell or an organism, say, but it does utilize the machinery, the DNA and the cytoplasmic machinery, to recreate itself inside a cell. So that's why it's considered a parasite living off a living cell. Mm-hmm. Viruses have been with us as far as we can trace back. Mm-hmm. They go far, far, far back. And our entire evolutionary sequence has depended on viruses. Mm-hmm. There's a thing called lateral gene transfer, horizontal gene transfer. When we procreate, we take our genes, mother and father, and we go vertically down the line to the offspring, and then they go down the line to the offspring. And that's called vertical transmission. But you also have horizontal transmission, that anything that your body learned while it was alive, particularly after its procreative phase, first 30 years or so, it automatically, at what it's learned, the virus comes in and takes and excises and utilizes that information to give advantage to other members of the species and helps inject that DNA and those changes or epigenetic changes into the other members of the species to give, in a sense, the advantage to them, what you learned and what they've learned to you. Mm-hmm. So infections between viruses have been part of the mechanism of evolution that we require. Mm-hmm. And we go around and we've had this idea that was terrible. I remember 40-something years ago, I wrote an article and lectured on the vital aspects of viruses in transmission. And people just went berserk. They thought, what are you talking about? They're bad. Mm-hmm. No. Viruses are neither good nor bad. They're simply transmission communication systems between members of the species, and sometimes between other species, as we found today with the coronavirus. But they require us, and we require them. Mm-hmm. It's an ecosystem that's essential. Now, there are viruses that can induce in some people symptomatology, but in other people, no, as we can see from the coronavirus. Mm. I call it Saint Corona, actually, because there's a lot of blessings that are coming out of it that people aren't paying attention.
Yeah.
The pollution is changing, mm-hmm. Transmission, communication, and we're all on Zoom today. There's lots of technological advancements. Mm. And we will someday look back at this and go, this was actually an advancement. Even though there's been a few people that have passed, in the long run, there's going to be an advancement. Mm-hmm. And this is what viruses are about. And in almost every case, we get more adaptive by the challenge in our immune system, more adaptive, and move up a notch in our capacity to have resilience and adaptability to changing environments. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about. It's to assist us. People are sitting there wanting to blame a virus. Mm-hmm. And a virus sometimes has what they call pleomorphism. They have the capacity to change from one form into another. I first learned about that by Dr. Jurczyk when I was about 20 in microbiology class. And that was a novel thinking that a virus under one setting and in one environment can change and morph itself into a slightly different other form because of our reverse transcriptase and reverse genetic engineering. We can actually shift it and modify it and allow it to adapt to different needs to help other members of the species. Mm. So it is a ecosystem, essential ecosystem in our body. But we don't want to focus mainly on the virility of the virus as we do it to do the adaptability of the host. Because somebody's living,
right?
That means that they're doing something different in the way they respond. I'm a firm believer that if an individual prioritizes their daily actions and fills their day with those actions that are most meaningful, most inspiring, most productive, the highest priority actions they can do that provides the greatest contribution and the greatest fulfillment, the objectivity that we get by having that state of mind, the neutrality that we get, so we're not fearing the loss of that which we seek and fearing the gain of that which we're trying to avoid and having a highly polarized, impulsive, and instinctual amygdala-run system. Mm. But by living by high priorities, our executive function comes online. We mitigate those volatilities. We are more stable, more objective, and we have the capacity to calm down cytokine reactions, calm down immune overreactions, and adapt to the virus as if it's just a stimulus giving us information. Mm. So I'm more focused, I'm less focused on the virus, and I'm more focused on the host, and I'm more focused on the things that they can do to give them greatest resilience and adaptability and empower their immune system to do its job, which is ecosystem maintenance. Yes. You know, in the 1940s and 50s and during the Fleming and the Koch's postulate era and the germ theory era, the whole idea was viruses are bad and we have an immune system that deals with those attacks and we fight back and it's all fighting.
Yep.
That entire thing has been thrown out since the 80s. And I've been watching 40 years of this change. The immune system is now considered one of the sensory systems of the body. Mm-hmm. And it's taking the receptor sites on microorganisms and giving feedback to the brain and the autonomic nervous system and the hypothalamus and endocrine system on how to respond, not to eliminate microorganisms, but to actually regulate their ratios to make us most adaptive to what our environment is. Mm-hmm. So we're a wildlife management system, not an elimination system. The immune system's language is changing before our eyes. And the old model of a virus is bad and we have to have an immune system to protect it. That whole thing is outdated. Mm. What's happening is all the microorganisms are working as an endosymbiotic or a symbiotic relationship with the host to try to maximize the fulfillment of that host's mission on this planet, which is an expression of their highest values. And when we live by those highest values congruently, I really believe that we're authentic. And when we do, we get rewarded by immune function that's homeostatic. Mm.
It seems we're both like,
I know what I want to talk about.
But it seems, so we know, I mean, you were saying this, well, I first met you in 2003, you were saying this way back then, you know, viruses, we have good viruses. They're neither good nor bad, but there's some actually transmit information that we require. And
yes.
One of the ways in which the body does that is through a virus. And so, but when we talk about, because it seems everybody's trying to change the outer world to fix something in the inner world, right?
That's it.
But when, you know, I say to the guys all the time, when we're inwardly clear, we're inwardly fluent, we're inwardly fluid, we understand what the vision is, we just stick to that, let everybody else do what they need to do. Now we are influencing the outer world, and the outer world has a capacity to adapt to a transforming human.
Yes.
And if we want the changes to happen, the silly thing to do is try to change the outer world and wait for the inner world to adapt.
That's like a marriage. Trying to fix the spouse doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, when we live in alignment congruently with what we value most, our most intrinsic value, the one that we spontaneously want to fulfill, we're intrinsically driven. Mm. The voice and the vision on the inside becomes more profound than opinions on the outside. Mm-hmm. When we are not doing that and we're subordinating to the injected values of outer authorities that we've given power to because we've been too humble to admit what we see in them is inside us. Uh-huh. And we inject values of their life into our life and try to be somebody we're not inauthentically. We move out of the executive function that calms down and mitigates these volatilities and go into the amygdala. The amygdala is a desire center that's seeking pleasure, trying to avoid pain, seeking prey, trying to avoid predator, seeking, you know, support, trying to avoid challenge. Ease without difficulty. It's striving for a hedonistically pursuit of a monopoled one-sided world. And as a result of it, we get disempowered, searching for that which is unavailable and trying to avoid that which is unavoidable. Mm-hmm. And as a result of it, we're extrinsically driven because anything we infatuate with occupies space and time in our mind and runs us. Anything we resent occupies space and time and runs us. So we're extrinsically run. And therefore we buy into a model of the world that the world outside runs our life. And so we look, we blame a devil and we look for a savior. Mm-hmm. We blame a demon and yes. We look for some mm-hmm. saint. Mm-hmm. And we don't realize at the level of our own soul, the state of unconditional love, where we're purely objective, doing what we love, all of that on the outside is inside it. Nothing's missing inside us.
Mm. Oh, cool.
We don't need the outside world to provide things. Mm. It's our perception, decisions, and actions of the outside world that provides it all.
Right.
And we have control over that. We only have control of our perception, decisions, and actions. And anytime we escape from those accountabilities, we're automatically disempowering ourselves as far as a model and a theory or a solution to so-called problems that aren't even there except in the minds of people that have skewed views.
Right. Yeah.
Go on.
No, go on.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. We're moving in. Right, we're moving into it's the dawning of the age of Aquarius. It's the light age. It's the information age. And it feels like a form of perturbation where the world is pressurizing us to own our divinity, to remember who we are. Now, but it seems very evident at the moment. Like it seems to people who are thinking about how they're thinking. I could be wrong. This could have been going on forever. What I mean, I know that you'll say to me, I know you're going to say, look, Mitch, it's time, it's space, it's frequency. It's been happening for a long time. But how do you feel about that? I mean, is this an age of us being where life is saying, wake up? Or has that just always been happening?
I think that's been there the whole time.
Right.
You know, the age of Aquarius is supposedly 2,160 years. And before that was Pisces for 2,160 years.
Right.
And before that was, you know, Aries and Taurus and Gemini and the Leo and this Cancer and Leo and Virgo. So every 2,160 years in a 5,920 year cycle, there's the zodiac houses that go through there.
Right.
And the precession is helping set that up. They all have thought that this is the age of enlightenment because we're always proud of ourselves. Our amygdala is addicted to pride, it's addicted to fantasy, it's addicted to consumerism. Mm-hmm. Our executive center governs it. Mm-hmm. So if we live by our highest values, we govern ourselves. And we see objectively the pair of opposites, both sides synchronously. It's not a gloom or zoom or boom, it's just the magnificence. When we get into our amygdala, we have a fantasy, it's gonna get better. We want pleasure, and so what we do is we tend to make it look like, well, this is the age of enlightenment. Every culture tends to think that's the enlightened age. Mm-hmm. But when you stop and think about it, pardon me for going off on this bizarre
No,
tangent.
No, no, no. Where? This is John DeMarco.
We got about a we we've got a rough estimate of about 24,000 miles around the Earth, right? Circumference.
Yeah.
About 8,000 mile diameter, give or take. Mm-hmm. Pi. Mm. We're one astronomical unit from the sun, which is about 93 million miles between perihelion and aphelion. Average distance, 8 minutes for light travel. From the sun, we can't see the Earth unless you got a telescope. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So we got this little guru going around on the planet, sitting in lotus position, going around, we're all enlightened, I'm enlightened, I'm enlightened, I'm enlightened. But that's an infinitesimal to the sun. Mm-hmm. Right? The sun is looking back and go, yeah, you're a speck of dust that didn't quite get absorbed by me yet. Now the sun is 26.6 to 28,000 light years from the center of the Milky Way. It takes about 200 to 250 million years to go around the Milky Way. And it's spiraling out as it's going around. And to the center of the Milky Way, which has around 300 billion stars and a big old Sagittarian A little black hole in the middle of it, imagine there's a cat there, some dude there, looking out at this solar system, trying to look through all the gas and dust that's in the way. Yeah. Can't even see the solar system we live in. And we can hear that solar system with a little guy sitting on a planet going around and going, I'm enlightened. Yeah. And now this solar system going around the Milky Way is part of a local cluster, which is also being pulled towards a Virgo cluster, which is pulled towards a Mauna Kea supercluster, which is pulled towards a shapely attractor, which is a vast, insignificant blip in superclusters amongst the observable universe. And so whatever we know right here in this age, in this little era,
doesn't mean
we have to humble ourselves. That's why Einstein said it's wise to live with holy curiosity, mm-hmm. and keep exploring on a daily basis. And he said, it's enough for me on a daily basis to explore another little portion of the infinite potential intelligence that permeates the universe. And if I can get a glimpse of another insight on a daily basis, I feel graced by this grace experience called life. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we have this illusion that it's, you know, there's people out there that think we're now around the corner, it's going to be all enlightened or something like that. Mm. And then, or that's doomsday. I don't pay attention to psychotic splits on a collective level. I realize that no matter what's going on, you want to ask yourself and not live in the past about how it used to be or live in the future about the fantasies of how you want it. Be as objective as you can right now. What's happening before me? Mm-hmm. And how can I use this for the greatest contribution of service and the greatest reward, altruistically, narcissistically, and in perfect equanimity? So I can do the most I can do as a human being on this planet at this moment. Mm-hmm. That to me is the wisest thing you're going to do. Because otherwise we're comparing ourselves to fantasies of the future or nightmares or fantasies of the past. And instead of just being present in the moment and doing something amazing right this minute with what resources we have. I think it's a great question to ask ourselves daily. What is the greatest contribution I can make? What is the highest priority action I can take that'll serve the greatest number of people with the resource I have today in the most effective and efficient manner and in a way that inspires me? Mm. That's a wise question to ask every day. Quality of our life is basically quite the question to ask.
Yeah. So you said the things that we control, perception, decisions, and actions. Is that what you said?
That's it. What else you got control over?
Yeah, because otherwise, Okay. So you talk a lot about, and you know, we talk a lot about value systems and knowing what your purpose is and being on purpose, right? But can you just talk a little bit to, you know, how that actually affects the physiology of the body and why it's so important? Because I've heard you talking about the glial cells and what's actually happening. But I feel like to help people understand why it's so important to live on purpose and why it's so important to have your values and what that does for you at a physiological level.
Well, because the reason that I think we wanted to ask that question, John, is because, you know, some people, not everybody, feel as if the border between their inner world and their outer world is their skin. And we now know more about the broadcasting system. So we're talking about how, you know, the outer world will adapt. But can we show the link? Can we show, you know, okay, there's an actual link. Can we talk to that?
Well, do you have a couple of days?
Yeah.
I don't think you have a couple of days, though.
I don't. I've got another conference to go to. But let me just share this. When you're infatuated with somebody, you're conscious of the upsides and unconscious of the downsides. Mm-hmm. and you're not seeing what's actually there. Again, through the pulvinar nuclei of the thalamus, the gating and filtering system, you're filtering reality. And as you know, a fatal attraction, Glenn Close and Michael Douglas, that was an infatuation. And it has another side when you just be patient. Mm-hmm. You also, when you're resentful to something, you're conscious of the downside and conscious of the upside. So anytime you judge something where it's more positive than negative or more negative than positive, and you judge it, you're splitting your full consciousness, your mindfulness, into conscious and unconscious halves. And therefore, you now, what you're unconscious, you're being ignorant of. You're not really knowing something. You're being ignorant of part of it. And you're attracted to it with an impulse, if it's infatuation, or repelled from it with an instinct, if it's something you resent. Now, whenever you infatuate with somebody, you're too humble to admit what you see in them is inside you. And you disown, dismember, deflect, in a sense, pretend it's not in your life. That's why you're infatuated with them. Mm-hmm. You're too humble to admit what you see in them is inside you. That's why you put them on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. When you resent somebody, you're too proud to admit what you see in them is inside you, and you put them in a pit. And any part that you disown that you're too proud or too humble to admit you have creates a void in your awareness of who you are. You're ignorant of who you are. Mm-hmm. In truth, nothing is missing in you. And whatever you see, even though you may be too proud or too humble to admit you have it, but you're too proud or too humble to admit it.
Yeah.
And therefore they run your life. Mm-hmm. Those outside circumstances run your life because you've disowned yourself.
Yes.
Those disowned parts create voids. And whenever you're infatuated with something, you resent its opposite. Whenever you resent something, you infatuate with an opposite. And so you create a bipolar void. And those voids want to be fulfilled. So you can self-actualize and not feel empty, because it's a form of emptiness. It's kenoma in the Gnostic writings. When you live by your highest value, which is called the telos by Aristotle, which is teleologically the most powerful, most meaningful, the most inspiring, the most fulfilling way to live, you're most objective. And objectivity means neutral. Objectivity is not subject to bias and partial-minded, which is judging, but it's neutral. And so when you live by your highest value and you're pursuing something that inspires you, you're willing to embrace the challenge and the support equally in the pursuit, the pain and the pleasure equally. As a result of it, you're more likely not to judge. And as a result of that objectivity, you're actually able to neutralize and fulfill those voids which are derived from the judgment. And that's why your purpose in life is the most efficient and effective pathway to fulfill the greatest amount of voids with the greatest amount of value. So when you live by priority and fill your day with the truly most meaningful and inspiring and most productive things that serve and inspire you, you dissolve the judgments that weigh you down, that keep you extrinsically driven, and liberate yourself and normalize and homeostate your physiology. Now, when you infatuate with something and minimize yourself, you activate the parasympathetic nervous system because it represents prey, which represents anabolic stimulus for food, and you want to eat it and consume it. We've all done, when you're really infatuated with somebody, you want to consume somebody, mm-hmm. literally eat them. Mm-hmm. I call it mathematically 69. That's a joke. But what happens, but when you resent somebody, it's 96. You're back to back. You're not facing each other. Yeah. So what happens when you resent somebody, you activate the fight or flight sympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic nervous system acetylates histones, DNA, and the methylation is occurring when you're actually on the sympathetic side. You methylate histones and DNA and other cytoplasmic materials, and you epigenetically alter the expression of the genome with methyl tags and acetyl tags, or simulation and ubiquitination. You actually create an epigenetic alteration, which then creates a slight different differentiation of protein manufacturing, which is involved in structural proteins and enzymes, which change physiology and change the movement of fluids and materials from either the inside of the cell to the outside under sympathetic or back into the inside for parasympathetic. And you're altering cell physiology, which we label illness. Mm-hmm. An illness is really a feedback loop. The symptoms are a feedback loop to let us know consciously that we have perceived more support than challenge and more challenge than support. And we're fooled by the extrinsic world with our perceptions instead of back living in priority and seeing things objectively. And so the moment we go back to objectivity and live by priority, our physiology normalizes. We have the most resilience and adaptability. Our immune system rallies. Our autonomic system normalizes. And our symptoms subside. And we've proven that in thousands of cases working with people, that instead of sitting there and running their story as victims of history by judging things on the outside, they become masters of destiny by loving things on the inside. This is still the greatest healer on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's cool. And we wanted to ask a little bit about epigenetics?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
I just wanted just to finish off with that then.
Sure.
So because that then you're saying that causes illness. If we aren't living in accordance to our highest values, we will get the feedback system to tell us that that's what's happening, right?
So yeah, can you tell illness us? Is on the way. Illness is on the way, not in the way.
Yes.
It's on the way. It's working on our behalf. Pardon me for the
tangent. No.
Imagine everybody probably has had a moment where they've oinked out a bit.
Yeah.
They probably pigged out. Yeah. So imagine going out and pigging out and you eat way too much food. And the next morning you wake up and you got snuffy nose, your eyes are a little puffed, your belly is feeling bleh, you got the cramps, gas, bloat, diarrhea, stomach ache, and you're got a headache. And you just pigged out.
Yep.
And maybe drank too much. Mm-hmm. And the next morning you have all those symptoms and you say, man, I got to go to the doctor. Okay, which is the most ludicrous thing to ever do. Go to the doctor and the doctor says, well, you need an antacid for your stomach, an anti-flatulent for the farts. You need an anti-poop medicine to do this. You need an anti-analgesic for the headache. You need an antihistamine for this. You need anti that. And they're basically trying to get rid of the symptoms. And if you don't have the symptoms, you're quote well. Mm-hmm. That's ludicrous. Mm-hmm. That's a pharmaceutical heyday. Mm-hmm. But stop and think about that. If a real doctor cares about the patient, they're going to ask, when did it begin? Mm-hmm. Well, it started this morning. What the hell did you do last night? Mm-hmm. Well, I pigged out. I ate for 4 hours. Oh, really? And so is your body actually creating symptoms to let you know that behavior is unwise to pursue? Is it a feedback to you to let you know to eat wisely? Because the second you stop eating that way, you don't have those symptoms. Mm-hmm. So that's a guidance mechanism. Symptoms are guidance mechanisms of how to live with maximum potential. But it's misinterpreted today because we're not using applied physiology like we could. And we're so bombarded by a $1 trillion industry selling us some fix and pill for every ill that we're not actually being accountable for our life. We're living to eat instead of eating to live. And functioning from an engagement. When a woman knows she's got a wedding coming up and she's got to get in that wedding dress and she's got a week or so to go, 10 days to go, she's going to be disciplined, focused. She's going to be that. She's going to make sure she's getting in that dress. The day of the wedding, she doesn't matter. She can eat and pig out and do whatever she wants because she scored. Now she's closed the deal. But in the meantime, when she's doing something that's extremely meaningful to her, her executive center comes online and it governs behaviors that we normally are not able to govern because we're in our amygdala. And our amygdala is our leptin and ghrelin nightmare center. It's where we go into excess and deficiency of function. So wisdom is prioritizing your life. We can't escape that as the key to bringing overall empowerment in all areas of life, not just health and well-being. Mm. But epigenetics is an expression and a feedback mechanism to guide us to live authentically. And it's being used. And anything that we don't love that's stored in our subconscious mind, that's in a judgment that's still reverberating in our mind and occupying space and time in our mind, is going to be stored epigenetically in the codes and methylations and acetylations to let us know that we still have not got that loved yet. We're still caught in this judgment in our life. If we love it and transcend it, the epigenetic tags, methyls and acetyls, release.
Right.
They're not permanent. And then the physiology goes back to normal and has to print out the normal proteins. But they're creating separate individual, you might say, changing transpositional proteins necessary for that perception that you have, which is a more primitive perception, a more extreme perception than what's actually there. What's actually there is something magnificent. What we interpret there, we go into bipolar states, really good or really bad or really positive, really negative. We got gloom and doom or zoom and boom. And these are delusionary states of the amygdala instead of an objective state to know that there's always two sides to life. You have two sides. I have two sides. If I went up to you and I said, you're always positive, you're never negative, you're always kind, you're never cruel, your bullshit meter would go off and go, not always.
Yeah.
If I said, you're always mean, you're never nice, you're always cruel, you're never kind, you're always wrathful, never peaceful, you go, not really. But if I said, sometimes you're nice, sometimes you're mean, sometimes you're kind, sometimes you're cruel, you would know with certainty that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So objectivity brings certainty and physiological homeostasis, and subjective biases and judgments automatically create epigenetic induced autonomic illness responses.
So, because, you know, in terms of like, in terms of what's going on around at the moment, and in terms of the fact that everyone's talking about, you know, health and safety and, you know, vaccines and all the things, there's what we're saying is that we have to do what we love. When we do what we love, we are most in alignment. So where does fear play into that? Where is that lopsided? Because, you know, we talk about the ratios, the 7-to-1 and the lopsidedness, and how we can bring ourselves back into balance in terms of that, and what part fear plays in that. Because if there's a lot of fear going around, then people are, their immune system is compromised, right? Can you talk a little bit to that?
Yes. There's only two fears. There's only two stresses, distresses. Only two known. Two distresses. The perception of loss of that which you seek. You have the fear of loss of that, and that's distressful. And the fear of gain of that which you're trying to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
So it boils down in the amygdala as starvation and being eaten.
Right.
The fear of loss of that which you seek, starvation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fear of gain of that which you're trying to avoid, being eaten.
Yeah.
So that support and that challenge, that parasympathetic and that sympathetic, anabolic and catabolic mechanism, is the most primitive basic response that every one of our fears pass through. The fear of loss of money or the gain of bills, the fear of loss of an affectionate partner or the gain of somebody we used to date and we don't want to see again. The fear of loss of business partner, the fear of somebody that's trying to sue us. No matter what the support or challenging situation, the brain registers it as, I'm going to starve or I'm going to be eaten.
Right.
Now, those two fears are a result of highly polarized perceptions. Now, let me develop that because that's a mind blower.
Mm-hmm.
When we're under survival mechanisms and we're not living by our highest values where we're objective, we still have the same machinery, the same neural pathways as the animals below do.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do when we go into our survival mechanism, we create what is called patternicity. You know, in the wild, we have an ecosystem. The ecosystem has a prey and predator, and it has a food chain.
Yep.
And we're the alpha, right? The predator at the top, supposedly. But that food chain has food we eat and predator that tries to eat us, right, in our life, anything that challenges us.
Mm-hmm.
So we've built into our makeup a chameleon effect. The prey that we're searching for hides with a chameleon coverage, and our predator hides so it doesn't get seen when it's about to pounce on us. So we have patternicity to be able to find patterns in camouflage in order to survive. We also have what is called pareidolia, which is basically the ability to see facial expressions in these patterns. We've all been in a bathroom in a marble floor and seen faces of animals or humans in the marble or in the wood grains. That's pareidolia. We also have agonicity, where we personify those and animate those in case they're alive as a protective mechanism. Then we have what we call apophenia. We create meaning on them based on our past experiences. And then we have what is called false positives, because it's wiser to have a false positive and assume that's a prey than assume not. Because if we assume that it is, we'll go after it. If we assume it's not, we'll pass it by. And it's better to have a false positive on the predator. Because if we assume that it's there, we'll get away from it in time. If not, we're dead.
Yeah.
So we have a skewed, false positive, adrenaline running, subjective bias, confirmation bias, disconfirmation bias, distortion of our reality as a survival mechanism when we're down in our amygdala. which causes our judgments and causes our polarities, which traps us in the things that we get in bondage to, the attachments, as the Buddha says, to those things that we're afraid of losing or afraid of gaining. And we have to accentuate that because we need that adrenaline to be able to catch that prey and avoid that predator. So we accentuate those and exaggerate. That's all good and this is all bad. And we go into extremes, fundamentalism almost. And this is what allows us to, if we're extremely positive and infatuated with something, we fear its loss. If we're extremely resentful, we fear its gain. We add fear by not living by priority. If we live by priority and go to objectivity, we neutralize those phobias. And if we don't, we live by subjective biases. We accentuate them. And it's those fears that causes an extreme reaction in the immune system. And part of the problem with the coronavirus is not the virus. Yeah. It's our immune's response to that virus.
Yeah.
And those cytokines are basically causing the reactions of the difficulty breathing and some of these responses. And it's not to do with it, with actually the virus. It's secondarily our response. And now the media goes out there and scares the hell out of everybody.
Yeah.
And now you think I could die. And so what is our immune system doing?
Shutting down.
It's accentuating and hyperdrive responses. It's overdoing because of it's which is basically a shutdown in its function.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what we're doing is we're accentuating that with our emotions. If we centered ourselves and drank water and got focused on highest priority things, we have a decreasing probability of having that virus have any effect on our life at all.
This is, I think what you just said there is so friggin' important. I mean, the whole thing was important, but so friggin' important because it's like people, it's trying to send us back there anyway. You know, our environment is whispering something. And it's like the quicker—
And get us authentic.
That's right. The quicker people just stop getting hooked into the non-substantiated, lopsided, misinformed pettiness of something that they don't understand and are ignorant to, the quicker they're able to actually fulfill their destiny, the more vitalized they'll be, the more energized they'll be, the more inspired they are. And you don't have time for that petty bullshit. I mean, before we get on here, we had, you know, and your thing to me was, Mitch, there's no point in getting caught up in that, which is what we were saying. And which, you know, clarifying this message now is to people, don't get, of course the media feed on that stuff, they need to. You've said right in the beginning, was something you said to me many years ago, an organism will never fucking annihilate its reason to live, mate, so it has to perpetuate the problem. It's never going to give you the good news, because then it's no fucking reason to live. It's like your hospitals
are
not going to fucking cure you.
You're not grounded.
Yeah.
You're not grounded. You know, the ground of our own essence of being, it's a completely symmetrical state of consciousness where we see both sides, equanimity, equilibrium, whatever you want to call it. And that state liberates us from the bondage of the infatuation, resentments, and judgments that keep us distracted from the magnificence of what life is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a firm believer that we want to blame things on the outside. You know, the mass media is a sensational media. Mm-hmm. It's designed to sensate, to cause extremes, to make people react.
Because that's
it sells things.
Yeah.
It sells things.
Yeah.
But that's not where the truth and mastery is. Never has been. Truth has never been in the hands of the masses. It's always been in the hearts of the masters. And inside everyone is a master waiting to surface. But what we do is we get caught in the extrinsic world, fooled by the mass conformity, instead of actually being willing to be a unique individual making a difference. I spoke in Krugersdorp prison in South Africa. 1,000 orange uniform members of the prison. And this is maximum security, 3 stories underground. There's 1,000 of them. Wow. These are 25-year sentences to life. And I got up on a stool, a plastic stool, and spoke to them. I had 6 guards around me. And I had the warden there with me, and Al Jazeera television crew filming the whole thing. And
did you say Al Jazeera, the television, the news guy?
Yeah, they were filming.
Wow.
And I said, how many of you, no matter what you've been through, no matter what you're going through, no matter what you've been and experienced, deep inside still want to make a significant difference on this planet? And in 1/1,000,000th of a second, every hand in that prison went up. They all want to make a difference. But how are you going to make a difference fitting into the herd instinct? Mm. You're only going to make a difference by finding your unique hierarchy of values, prioritizing your life accordingly, and living your uniqueness and finding the thing that you want to contribute on the planet and doing it in a way effectively that serves people. That's rewarding. Mm-hmm. That's fulfilling. That allows us to maximally express ourselves. And it's that that these individuals deep inside want, but they had not learned the tools and they had false understandings. And so they've led themselves into these situations they're in. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when I actually spoke to them, they got it. Mm-hmm. These individuals were there. They needed to hear it. Mm-hmm. They were ready to hear it. Because innate inside all of us, we know that. Mm-hmm. We know deep inside we want to make a contribution.
And it's there. So, I mean, it seems then that the key to this is the quicker we can all remember our divinity. Like, if people realize we talked about the sun, and then we talked about black holes, and we talked about the galaxies. If people realize that they are that immortal energy, they'll stop fighting for their mortal lives. And then the world around us will feed us back what we require. Like I say to this, to my guys all the time, you know, everybody's, oh, don't drink Coca-Cola. No, but if you tell Coca-Cola that, you know, we need those systems of supply, if that breaks down, we've got all sorts of problems. But if you keep drinking the Coke, they're going to keep giving you the friggin' stuff. If you keep clicking, liking the news, they're going to keep giving you that stuff. But if you start to listen to yourself and eradicate that stuff from your life and just only fill your time and your energy with things that are inspiring and things that you love, well, then they will have to feed that also. Does that make sense?
Of course.
Yeah.
The only time I watch TV is when I'm on it.
That's a bit narcissistic, John.
I want to look at what I've done and look at the feedback and look at what I can do to refine. I mean, it's just part of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't sit there and wallow in the polarities that people want to do, because I find that it's incomplete. Mm. You know, we've been doing this for a long time. And when we ask the quality questions in life and see both sides of things, we feel love. Mm. We feel appreciation. Mm-hmm. We get the transcendental feelings of gratitude, love, inspiration, enthusiasm, certainty, and presence. Mm-hmm. And we transcend the extrinsic world that is trying to, you know, run us in our imagination. And we finally get to run ourselves. Mm. And we give ourselves permission to do something extraordinary. So I'm a firm believer in prioritization. Mm-hmm. I do it every day. I fill my day with what I love doing, which is research, write, travel, teach.
How's the traveling going for you, John?
My traveling right now has been almost exactly the same, except it's on Zoom.
Yeah, and it's at night time, right? Because you're going to have a sleep for a few hours, get up at 1 a.m. to present your event.
I present in two in London. But you know what's interesting? The other day I was teaching the breakthrough experience. I've taught it 1,108 times.
Yeah.
And I was doing it, and there was a guy in Madagascar sitting outside overlooking a bluff of a river, beautiful river with magnificent trees, and Madagascar with a satellite tuning into the breakthrough experience. We had a guy in Mongolia tuning into it, Kazakhstan tuning into it,
wow.
Japan, London, Italy, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, and they're all tuning in.
Mm.
So I'm traveling actually as efficiently the way I'm doing it right now, and to reach people.
Mm.
So when all of a sudden we get the flights back up, I'll do that too.
Mm.
But I'm grateful because it catalyzed a more efficient way of reaching people now than we've ever had before.
Yeah, and I was noticing that when I was seeing your the advertisements coming up, and I was noticing that you'd pivoted, changed it over so that you could be online, but you're still accessing and you're still getting to all of those people.
I'm getting everybody. We're getting more people than ever.
Yeah.
We're adding thousands of people a week now, and it's just amazing what's happened.
Yeah. We were, you know, because I'm noticing we've got, you know, we're in Australia at the moment. In Melbourne, we've got a lot of people that are struggling because they're being locked down, and they're feeling, I suppose, a lot more restricted in their movements. And I want us to talk a little bit about this whole the feeling of disempowerment, because they're feeling a lot of people are feeling disempowered, and they feel like they haven't got the power to go and do some of the things that they were able to do, you know. And then on the same by the same token, we've been talking a little bit to our people about the fact that people are waiting for somebody else to come in and save them. They're waiting, like there's an illusion that something is going to fix this up and it's going to sort it out, whether it's Trump or a vaccine or something outside of them. And I want to talk a little bit about the fact that the perception of a savior doesn't exist without the lopsided perception that we need saving, and what we can do about that in terms of our empowerment and how we can take that back.
As long as we blame an extrinsic anything, yep, we're going to look for an extrinsic solution to it. Mm-hmm. Yes. You blame a devil, you're going to need an angel or saviors, you know. And religion has taught that and sold that to disempowered people for centuries.
Yeah.
And I have very little time for anthropomorphic games like that.
Yeah.
Because they personify anything to challenge your values as some sort of demonic, evil thing or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, Satan or whatever. And then they personify this as this positive thing. That's dissociated states. That's a dissociative identity state. You're it.
Yes.
Look within, because you're it. The hero and the villain is all on the inside. When you finally embrace the hero and villain and on the inside, you master your lives. Mm-hmm. I'm the most vile and the most vicious and the most virtuous, as Nietzsche said. Yeah. Machiavelli said, unless you're the heir, you heir the saint and the sinner, don't expect to lead as a great leader.
Yeah.
You got to be able to be on both sides and own both sides.
Yeah.
So I don't waste my time on that. I don't find that productive. What I do is ask, there's two questions you have. You have control of your perception, decisions, and actions. And you have a decision to change your perception or to change your actions.
Yeah.
Now, if you fill your day with high priority actions that inspire and delegate low priority actions, that's one way of empowerment.
Yep.
But until you can delegate it, let's say you have nobody to delegate to it yet.
Yep.
You can take your perception and ask, how specifically is whatever's happening helping me fulfill my mission?
Yep.
That's the greatest question a human being can ask on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. How specifically is whatever is happening, coronavirus, the lockdown, how is it helping me fulfill my mission? And don't say it's not and be a victim of history.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ask your question, how is it helping? And answer it and be accountable for that answer, because it's there. Mm. The answer is there. Mm-hmm. It's always there. So if you go and look and ask, how is it doing it? You really have the choice of going and doing what you love through delegating, or going and loving what you do through linking. Mm-hmm. Those two masteries are the mastery of life.
Yeah.
So that means if you can go and do something about it and prioritize your life and go do something that's more inspiring, great. Delegate lower priority things and free yourself. But until then, if you don't have somebody you can delegate it to, go and take what you're doing, whatever it may be, and find out how it is on the way and helping you fulfill your life. Because then you don't think of it as outside you.
Exactly.
You realize it's just something that you're doing to help you fulfill your dream.
And then the freedom then is inside of yourself as well, right? It's not dependent on what anybody else
is
doing.
There's nothing to do then.
Yeah.
And that's when human will matches divine will. Because we tend to typically think this outside divine will out there doing this to us. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's our perception of that world out there. Mm. And I've taken people who thought they had a terrible event. Can I share one of those?
Of course. Just for fun? Yeah.
I had a guy who came to the Breakthrough Experience in Houston, Texas. And I asked, does anybody have any grief over a loss of anything? Because you know my grief process.
Yeah.
And this guy put his hand up. He says, yeah, I'm grieving. I said, what are you grieving? He says, I lost $750 million friggin' dollars. Okay, and I thought, well, that's a pretty, that would probably be.
I'm grieving for him.
Yeah, you're grieving for him. And I said, all right, come on up. So I wrote on the board that he had lost $750 million. I said, okay, now go to a moment where and when you perceived that you lost that. Because I know exactly when it was. When I went to a Starbucks to use my credit card to get some coffee in the morning, and they said, I'm sorry, but your card is declined. He goes, what? I got an American Express. It's got $1 million I can put a thing on it, and it's declined? That's ridiculous. So he calls his bank and demands his bank to give him an answer, and he said, sir, you have no money in your bank. He was a business partner in a hedge fund with a gentleman that got him to sign papers, and they got and took everything and cleaned him out, wow. all the clients out. The guy took all the billions of dollars and disappeared to a non-extradited country and disappeared. And he knew that they were going to have problems with the feds because they were doing some things that were not so kosher. Well, the guy was. Not this guy, but the other guy. And so what happened is this guy is sitting there going, okay, I know exactly what it was. I said, at that moment, what did you gain? What's the upside to that? He goes, what's the upside of losing $750 million and you can't even pay your bills now? And you're going to lose everything you got. What do you mean upside? I said, go to the moment. At the moment you lost it, what's the upside? He goes, man, I can't see. I said, look again, be accountable. There is no loss without a gain. A door shuts, a window opens. What's the upside? He stared, and then all of a sudden he goes, okay, I got something. You're going to laugh. I was in a marriage with a gold digger that wanted me for my money. And I was worth $750 million, which means that if I divorced her, that's $387 million I would have to give her. And I was never going to give her $387 million to get out of that marriage. So I was going to endure that marriage the rest of my life because wow. I wasn't going to give away that control. And I said, so my wife, when she found out I had no money, flat disappeared, just took off. And I didn't have to give her a penny. That is an upside. So we ticked that off and everybody started laughing. I said, all right, so what's another benefit? He said, my life was absolutely intense. And I had literally taken sometimes amphetamines to stay up because I'm having to watch markets worldwide. I was overweight. My blood pressure was high. I was a time bomb. I could have died. I literally had hypertension. Since this has happened, I've lost the weight. I'm doing yoga. I'm actually drinking green drinks. I've got my health back. I said, put a dollar value on that first one with your wife. You said $387 million. Put a value on that life, your health. He said $100 million at least. I said, great. You're now at $487 million. And by the way, your $750 million wasn't really $750 million. It was only $387 because she owned half of it.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, but I don't want to hear that. I wanted to believe it was all mine because I'm the one that did it. I said, okay, but just know in legal terms, that's half hers, supposedly. So then he wrote down and got my health back. Then he, all of a sudden, he goes, that girl in the back there, that's my new girlfriend. And she's been with me since I've had nothing. I got a woman that actually loves me for me, not my money. And I said, I wouldn't be sure about that. You got a lot of potential. So, how much is that worth? And she says, yeah, how much is that worth? That's that for the back of the room. He goes, oh, crap. He said 50, 100, 100 million. And, you know, most people in the room are thinking, well, that's a lot of money. But to him, that was a typical thing for him. So I said 100 million. She goes, good. She wrote it down so he'd remember that. So she had an intention, I think. But anyway, I said, so what's another benefit? And we went down the list and started unveiling a bunch of benefits. And then he got to the big one. And this one made him cry. He goes, wow, I can't believe I didn't see this. He said, if I would have had my money left in that account, and this guy would have left with all the people's accounts, and the feds are after him, I'd be in prison. Him taking my money relinquishes me from that responsibility. And I have all the clients and I have all the legal knowledge. I can start a new hedge fund and do it legit and serve these people and try to help them grow their money back. And then as they go and investigate this person, maybe we'll get money somewhere down the line. And then he started crying. He says, this is the greatest day of my life. I can create a, and inside me, I was listening to my intuition, but ignoring it. My intuition was saying, I need to do that. But this had to happen for me to be authentic. I was sitting there lying to myself about staying in that marriage. I was basically thinking I was invincible with my health. And I was basically living a lie about the financial matters. And I knew that this guy I was partnering with was doing stuff on kosher. And I was ignoring it, thinking I was above that. And I needed to be humbled. And this is exactly what I needed to be on track, authentic, to be true to myself. I'm now grateful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It all took 48 minutes by asking the question. How is it on the way, not in the way? Mm-hmm. That's the master pathway.
Mm-hmm.
He walked over to that girl, put his arms around the girl. They cried together. And he goes, thank you. This has been one major breakthrough experience. I can't believe in 48 minutes, my life changed perspective.
Mm.
So we have the capacity to change our actions, which he's going to do, and change our perception. Mm. And the quality of our life is based on the quality of the questions we ask. Mm. We want to ask, what is it we would love to do in life that would serve vast numbers of people? What is the way we can get handsomely paid to do it? Mm. What are the highest priority actions we can do to make that happen? And what's the highest priority today? What obstacles might I run into? How do I solve in advance? What worked, what didn't work each day? How do I do it more effectively and efficiently tomorrow? And how did whatever happen today, no matter what it is, how does it help me get one step closer to this objective?
Mm-hmm.
If you ask those questions, the coronavirus is on the way, not in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And the setbacks and the constraints are actually liberating you from old patterns that you're entrenched in, that probably needed to be broken, that your intuition was whispering to you, but you're ignoring.
Mm-hmm.
And this is forcing you to move up and advance technologically in ways you didn't think. And if you're still playing victim of history and you're still blaming and looking for an outside source, well, you didn't get the lesson. You're missing it again.
It's crazy, you know, because for years there were certain things we wanted to build out, right? There were certain processes we wanted to build out. And because we were on stage so much, and I've got a young family now, as you know yourself.
Busy.
We couldn't do it. And the minute it happened, I mean, we got a great, great team of people I get to work with here. And everybody just jumped on board. Everybody was like, okay, what have we got to do? How do we pivot quickly? How do we take advantage of the situation? How do we grow out of it? And it's funny, I was with our accountants last week, and he was just saying, you know, you guys have really, really done well through this.
By rights, we're an in-person personal development organization.
Yeah.
So our systems rely on us being in person, and we're here still, you know, because we utilized it to our best advantage.
But I have to say, that's because at the core of what we do here, you know, our objective is about, you know, the person getting it, you know, get it to be watching a person have that, those tears flow out of them, their heart open, and we can't allow anything out here stop that from happening to a person. We have to create the environment that no matter where, locally, non-locally, near, far, in space and time, a person can reach that breakthrough moment, that epiphany, that moment of, you know, equanimity where their heart opens and they're just in sync and they understand their divinity. And once we sat with everybody and said, this is what, it's not about us, it's about them. And of course, we're along the way. Everything happened for us. It's crazy. It.
Yeah, we've been busier than ever.
Yeah.
And economically, we've done more than we've ever done. Mm. So
yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer that if you ask the right questions, the questions that bring you back into equanimity and authenticity, the doors of opportunity are always sitting there waiting for those that do not deny the magnificence.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
That's fantastic. John, do you sleep in a cryogenic machine? Like every time I see you, you're just getting younger, dude. What is it?
I'm getting
gray. Look at me. I'm only 22, John. Look at the fuck. Look.
Well, I'm three times your age. I'm 66 now. So I'm cranking. But no, I'm getting a bit of gray, but I'm still got a little hair, and I got more energy than most people, and
that's good.
I crank and keep busy. I don't have time to age because I'm too busy being, you know, inspired by what I do. So
Just before we go, how are the kids? Everybody all right?
Doing great. My daughter just released a new song today for her album, and is designing some amazing pieces. She's doing design work, fashion design, and sings.
Great.
My son has got a YouTube video. He's got about 8,000 followers or whatever.
Right.
And he's got the YouTube world.
Yeah.
Right.
My other daughter is teaching with me. She's going to be on with me at 2 a.m.
Wow.
And she's teaching the program and carrying a torch, and she's taking over the business. So
wow.
I can't complain. They're all emerging, doing what they love doing. That's what my only commitment is to not be in their way, but to help them find their way. Yeah. And that's it. And they found it and they know what they're doing.
Mm. Great work. That's great so to hear. Cool.
We loved having this conversation. I've got a million more questions here that I could ask, so we might have to get you on again, John, just to have another conversation, because we could talk forever. But that was really great. It was really good talking to you again.
It's always good hanging out.
It's always good listening to you speak, John, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the questions. Thank you for what you're doing, and it's great to catch up again.
Have fun at your event.
Yes.
Thank you.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.